world. This is Angular Air. My name is Kent C. Dodds. I am your host, and we are going to be talking about Angular Animate, NG Animate 2.0. And so I'll go ahead and introduce our guests and our panel. So for our guests, we have Matthias Neoma.
Hello.
Robert, I didn't practice your last name, Robert, and I got Matthias's last name wrong, too. But Robert, maybe you can say your last name.
It's Robert Messerly.
Okay, Messerly, yeah. It's so easy, except when you're talking to a computer and you know people are listening. then for our panelists, we have Amy Knight.
Hello.
And Carmen Popovicu.
Hi.
I've had plenty of practice with Carmen's last name. Jeff Walpley.
Hello.
And Patrick Diaz.
Hey, guys.
What was that? The say command on your Mac?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for doing that. Let's make that a thing. Actually, the say command could probably pronounce Matthias and Robert's last names better than I can. Okay, cool.
You'd be surprised.
Nice. Okay, so I'll go through a couple quick announcements. So remember, if you're watching live, you can ask questions for our panel and our guests using hashtag #EngineerQuestion on Twitter. And so tweet away. And make sure that you heart and not favorite all of our tweets. For next week's show, it's the same time and same place. I'm not going to tell you what it is because I don't know what it is. It's a surprise from Olivier, and so I'm a little bit nervous. But it is our last show for the year. We're reaching our year mark for Angular Air, so it's supposed to be pretty exciting. I should say it's not the last show. Like we're going to keep going. But anyway. As a reminder, always follow us on Twitter and Google Plus to keep up with the latest and greatest. We're Angular Air. And let's go ahead and get into our main stuff. So before we get into it, I think it'd be great if we ask our guests about themselves a little bit. So Robert, why don't you go first? Why don't you tell us who you are and what you have to do with Angular Animate, and then we can have Matthias go.
Hi. So I'm a member of the core team on Angular. I've spent most of my time for the past year working on Angular Material, and then over the past few months have joined in with Matthias in working on NG Animate.
Cool. Matthias?
Okay, so my name is Matthias. I work here at Google on the core team of Angular. I got involved because I did blogging on Angular beforehand and worked as a contractor for a few years. And the work that I was doing right from the beginning was work on NG Animate. So we've done it from version 1.1 in Angular up until the alpha versions of Angular 2.
Awesome. So why don't, as kind of a let's get going, why don't you talk about what NG Animate is?
So Angular, older versions of Angular, we wanted to have animation support, but we didn't want it to sort of be a baked-in system like that was sort of stuck in the middle of the code. So what we did was we created a module called NG Animate, which allows you to attach animations to your application, sort of sprinkle them on using CSS or JavaScript. So in a nutshell, NG Animate is a module that enables animation hooks to be present in your Angular application. Next question.
Kent, are you still there? I think Kent maybe froze, so sorry about that. Angular Connect, you guys got a chance to tell us about Angular 2. Can you start to get into, and that's what kind of the focus for this show is going to be. So can you tell us a little bit about, how Angular 1 differs from Angular 2 and some of the stuff that you started to talk about in your presentation?
So if we
Matthias, your mic.
We can't hear you.
Here.
Okay, is this better?
No? Yeah.
Yeah, so we know that Angular 2 is a complete rewrite of Angular 1, and we've done things differently in Angular 2, such as having components instead of directives for everything, and just all in all, it's a much different system. So if we think about animation, we also thought of it as being a different system, and we'll get into that throughout the talk.
Sorry, I've been like getting booted out like crazy. Could somebody pick up where we are? Because I have no idea what's going on.
Wait, I think we were starting to talk about NGAnime 2 and some of the differences. And I guess, like, to start off with there, to like get it, dive into that. I mean, what are some of the challenges in NGAnime 1? That led you to start to think about this new stuff, like new way of doing things? Matthias?
Yes, sorry.
Maybe not. Okay.
We're having trouble with the audio that we have here. Anyways. So, what were the challenges in Angular NGAnimate 1 that led us to do NGAnimate 2? Well, starting from the beginning, we wanted to have support for sequencing and the ability to choreograph like complex animations across multiple DOM elements together. That was the big focus right from the beginning. And we kind of realized with NGAnimate 1 that that is possible, but it was very difficult to do so. So, right from the beginning, we started out going in that direction, and then we also thought of, you know, could we expand CSS or could we have a better JavaScript DSL for doing this kind of stuff? And that eventually led us to having a shared sort of ecosystem that runs JavaScript code and CSS code. So right from the beginning, it was just more features and at the same time making things more efficient and powerful.
Yeah, I thought it was crazy in your talk that you went through a couple iterations of ways you were going to accomplish this, and one of them was going to be sort of creating a like almost like a sub language of CSS or like sub syntax. Like was that even something that would be valid, or it sounded like it wouldn't work in some browsers?
Yeah, so what we thought about in the beginning was that we could extend CSS. We could do some CSS hacks to allow us to have custom properties and do our animations through there. And it looked like something could really, like, it looked like it could work and look good on paper, but in practice it was actually very hard to do anything with that. So that was our first attempt. Our second attempt was, what about taking all that sequencing logic and put it out into a separate file, so like a JSON file, for example. And that was another attempt at, you know, making our own mini language to dictate how animations work. But then that too led to problems. So what we kind of discovered was that instead of reinventing the wheel, instead of having to introduce a micro language for everything and having your own special notation for things, it's probably better just to go back to simple JavaScript code. So if you think about Angular 1, one of the big benefits of Angular 1 at its time compared to other frameworks was that it didn't have a huge object model. It just had simple data structures, arrays and objects, and attaching data to the scope and things like that. So going back with our animations code, you know, we could go back to having very simple JavaScript code to do a lot of powerful things in animations.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about everybody else, but that definitely speaks to me. Like, I love doing everything just in JavaScript and not having to worry with CSS. So, like, the way your approach is probably what I would have preferred from the start. Patrick, were you going to mention something?
No, I can't. Wait.
I was going to say something, actually. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is very much a similar approach to what I did with Angular Formly, where doing markdown for forms can be very repetitive, and there are just problems with lots of bugs when you're repeating yourself like that. And so moving everything over to JavaScript kind of configuration-based model makes it easier to compose different animations together, or in the case of Formly, compose different forms together or field configurations together, so that you can keep things a little bit more dry, and just like using higher order functions or you know this composability model to kind of generate this configuration for animations in your case. Is that kind of some of the benefits that you're talking about?
Right. Yes, exactly. So if you think about like a programming language like Lisp or like Clojure, it benefits from the idea of using function composition to tie a bunch of small objects or small data sets together. And we can benefit from the same principles with our animation code. So what we thought of was that instead of having all this high-level stuff, why don't we just introduce a series of useful animation functions that you can wire together. So you have transitions, you might have some CSS styling, you might have a keyframe, and then you might have staggering, and then you just tie it all together with some simple functional composition, and then you have a nice sequence of operations.
So what does this have to do? Like, I remember when I saw some of the stuff that you're talking about with Angular Animate 2, it seems almost like you're kind of doing some of the same kinds of things as GreenSock. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Right.
It makes it seem like lots of people doing animations, JavaScript animations, will use GreenSock with Angular, but the work that you're doing will make it so that you don't actually need to bring GreenSock in. Is that kind of the idea?
There's no intentional desire to sort of take GreenSock or any of these tools out of the question. It's actually the desire is to sort of make the functionality easier with ng-animate, so you don't have to choose one tool exactly and then another tool. So you can sort of use CSS for the basic things, and then when you get to a certain spot in your animation code, then you can tap into GreenSock or you can tap into another animation library. That's the idea. So yes, you know, some things are similar. The idea of staggering is similar. The idea of timelines are similar. But if we're trying to build a system in ng-animate 2 that sort of exposes all this stuff out, but at the same time it makes it have a lot of internal knowledge so we can do testing better, we can do performance benchmarking, and you know, even possibly be able to export our animation code to different platforms.
Amy, I think you had a question.
Yeah, I was just going to see, it's kind of hard without a visual, but for people who didn't watch your talk, can you kind of try to explain the new animations that are going to be available now?
Yes, just give me 1 second because Rob actually can't hear anything. sharing a headset from his computer to mine doesn't seem to work. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to remove the headset and we're going to share one computer. And he's going to jump offline. So just 1 second.
That will probably make things easier for us.
Yeah. Okay.
Anybody know any good jokes while they're doing this? I think we could probably tell a good joke or two.
Okay, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you great.
Yep.
The whole time, Rob was just behind the computer, so he's doing that. Here we go.
Yeah, I'm right here.
All right, this is probably much better.
Yes, thank you.
So, Amy, to paraphrase your question, you said that for those who didn't watch the talk, what was the thing you wanted me to talk about exactly?
If you can talk about the new animations that are going to be available.
You want to take this one?
The new animations, anything specific or just everything?
So at the beginning of your talk, you guys demoed like the staggering stuff, just like how much more powerful it'll be now.
So, I mean,
how you can, like, build stuff up.
So the primary thing that we wanted to focus on, there were two things. One was to give you complete JavaScript control so that you can jump in with JavaScript when you need to, and then the other was to have a more explicit API where you can define reusable classes and everything. The other cool thing about this, the syntax that we came up with was this concept of everything is an animation, and you can wrap things in like parallel or stagger or these different shorthand notations for like shortcuts to doing stuff that would be more involved. There's a lot of benefits there, and you get a lot more power out of it. Does that answer your question?
More or less.
It's really hard without a visual, so I understand that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the...
Okay, so let's think about the problem at hand. So NGAnimate 1 had a big emphasis on CSS, and CSS is great at what it does, but as soon as you want to extend things, CSS starts to fall apart because, you know, for the things that we want to do, it wasn't designed for. So the idea was that if we separate styling from sequencing, from the choreography of the animation, that's where we can do the biggest improvements. That's where we can get the biggest and craziest stuff, the coolest features that we can think of to come out. And that's like the biggest emphasis on what's going to happen. You have CSS and styling for what it does that it's good at. You have plugins like GreenSock and other tools. They do what they're good at. But everything is tied together with the animation DSL. That's the central idea.
Can you expand more on the animation DSL? Like, how easy is it to pick it up? Because I remember, like, when learning Angular forever ago, like, one of the killer features of Angular was just like, cool, you know how to make an application. Now drop in ng-animate and include animate CSS and watch it go crazy. But then everyone at that point was like, oh my god, this is amazing. It's just because, like, previously before in web development, we wouldn't really do animation that much. So how easy is it to pick up the DSL? Will people have the same experience of just dropping ng-animate 2.0 and like do a few code snippets and see everything flying around the page? Like, can you like talk more about that?
Yeah, so one of the things that we are supporting is you will be able to drop in ng-animate 1 style, like a kind of pre-configured ng-animate 1 animation set, so that it would do the like ng-enter, ng-enter active stuff just like ng-animate 1. So like, you know, in terms of that, you still have that functionality. In terms of this new API, it was specifically designed to be simpler, more explicit in what you're doing. So like, you're very clearly adding a class by saying add class, or you're saying I have a sequence of animations, so you say sequence, and or I want to run these in parallel. And it becomes a lot, in my opinion, it very easy. I found that when we were creating demos we did a meetup a little while back, and we created demos for it, and that was the first time I used it from a user standpoint. It was like, wow, this is a million times easier. Like, it took me minutes to create 3 demos that would have taken a lot longer in Angular 1.
So I guess a good way to look at it is that because the DSL is so powerful on its own, we can make abstractions on top of it. So this migration abstraction of having old animation codes still work in Angular 2, it's just a plugin that we include. We have other ideas for having a sort of designer-friendly syntax. So like, a designer could make some complex animations, and we include a plugin that reads some markup language, like a JSON notation that explains how to do these animations. So to answer your question, Patrick, you can make it as complicated as you want. You can get into the nitty-gritty, or you can use some of the new abstractions that we'll provide, you know, to say, okay, handle everything in CSS the way that Angular 1 handled it. You know, just run this CSS class, or run this class one after the other. And if you think about it, once we get everything to work, that could just be some small string that you add into the annotation. It just works behind the scenes.
Two things I was going to quickly mention. You know, one is that I would contend with one of the foundations of your argument, Matthias, that CSS is good at what it does. If you've ever tried to middle align anything,
So if you use something for 10 years and it's still in use, I'd say it's good at what it does. It's not like we threw CSS away. It has its problems. It works, and we'll leave it as it is. We're not going to try to attach all kinds of other crazy things to it. And that's more or less what I meant. It's just like, use it for what it's designed for, and there are good things that they have in there, but then all the new stuff will have a better foundation for it.
Sure. So the other thing I was going to mention was that, you know, it's true that the Angular 1 ng-animate API was really easy to use and great. The one thing that I got tripped up on, which I think a lot of people did as well, and your one huge ng-animate article back in the day sort of covered, but was still somewhat confusing, is like, for all the on-enter, on-leave stuff, how it's different for different types of Angular attributes that you're trying to attach it to. And it just one of these things that, at least for me, never came natural to remember, oh yeah, this is on enter instead of like on leave, right? Like I forgot the all the different syntaxes or whatever. But first of all, is that something that you heard from other people was a common tripping point as well? And has any of that changed in the Angular NGAnimate 2?
I think that that was my first complaint when we started to build this, was because I was using it all the time on Angular Material, and I found myself looking for the reference quite often just to refresh my, oh, what was the class I was supposed to add here? Or like, what was the exact order of these things? And that's why I said,
right. Yeah.
So it would be nice if you as the user defined what was added. Like, I always use enter and enter active. I almost never use leave and leave active. I just use one of them because the state is already set. I don't need any setup state usually. So I was thinking like, oh, it would be nice if I could just define what's going to happen in this scenario.
Yeah, so if you think about it, the enter and enter active and leave and leave active, that's just a mini sequence of one class going to another class. So to make this easier in the next version, you as the animation offer, you can describe the classes that you want to animate. You can say animate this class for 0 seconds and then animate the next class for 1 second and have a transition between them, instead of having to rely on a naming structure, which we think solves everything. And like a lot of the stuff was just problems that we faced in Angular 1, where it's like the class add and class add active, things like that. It caused some pretty difficult collisions to solve. So if you, the offerer, are just explicitly defining what classes animate, that actually makes the job much easier for us to maintain. It makes your code better and smaller.
And then a nice little side effect of this is in practice, it turns out then you end up using, we only needed like 3 classes or 4 classes for all of our animations because the things we animated were so common, like invisible, visible, width zero, stuff like that. And so we, just as sort of a side effect we hadn't necessarily planned out, it made things much nicer in that you can reuse classes a lot too.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, because if you think about CSS transitions. Transitions are just transitioning from one class or one ID state to another state. But everybody tries to sort of like rely on the actual animation portion of it instead of the state change portion. And that's where things get tricky because you're saying, I want you to animate this style, but the style's going to stay or the style's going to get removed. And then you have stuff like keyframes, which are purely there for animation's sake, but you know, they require a lot of CSS code, and they rely, you know, tricky CSS styling to keep the styles after they're done, or to have an infinite animation, stuff that doesn't really work well with NGAnimate 1.
It, just really quick for keyframes, because I know that's not everybody is familiar with them, and can you just give a quick explanation of what they are and when they would be used?
So a keyframe is an animation that occurs over a series of steps. So a typical animation is you want to fade something in. It's going to, at the 0 step, so 0% of the animation, it's going to be faded out. And at 100%, it's going to be faded in. And what CSS will do is it will apply the animation across the keyframe like that. But keyframes are useful because then you can have multiple steps that do multiple operations. The downside, though, is that you can only do one element at a time, so you can't access inner children. And the difference with transitions is that transitions work, they can just figure out all the differences in styling from one class state to another state. So keyframes and transitions are different from each other. They work, like, you use them for what you need to use them for. But anything beyond that gets tricky. You have to have some sort of JavaScript intervention.
Right, especially if it's something where it's a timing thing where you want to animate to something, then do another transition, or like multiple ones at the same time.
Yeah, so even something like, how would I pause an animation? Okay, we can pause a keyframe. We can have the animation paused value, or animation play state value, and set that to pause. That's cool. But how do we jump to the 40%? Like, 40% into the animation, or 80% into the animation. That works in some browsers, it doesn't work at all. So we can't really, like with CSS, you could try your best to have hacks to do all this stuff, but it's sort of a cry for help. Like, we need a better way of doing this stuff. So that, you know, that's why we have the Web Animations API, but the Web Animations API is purely in JavaScript. It's kind of outside of the CSS territory, right? So you have, it's like, okay, if this doesn't work, then do this other way, which is much different.
Yeah, you're sort of touching on the last thing in your presentation where you were able to kind of pause the animations and like kind of rewind and stuff like that. That thing was like totally awesome. Can you kind of walk us through a little bit of how you were able to do that with ng-animate2 and you know, what types of new features did that demonstrate?
Okay, so what happens is the code that we have for ng-animate2 is a series of functions, like a Lisp family of functions. You know, you sequence things, you parallelize things, you query inner children, and you perform style operations or class-based animations. And everything's contained in a series of functions. So that gives us information about what you're trying to do. And we know, for example, how long the animation will run for before you start it. And we'll know all the elements that are being animated on. And with that, we can build out a timeline behind the scenes automatically. We'll know that at 100% the animation is done. We'll know at 60% you probably animated inner child into the page. So with that information, we can automatically port it into the Web Animations API behind the scenes. So you're writing code in CSS, you're writing code with styles, but it's getting pushed into the Web Animations API for you. And that gives us the power to have really performant animations. We can change the speed, we can reverse animations, we can pause, we can scrub, and anything beyond that, like, that's as fast as it could get, which is a good sign that we don't have to rely on, you know, CSS performance and CSS specificity and inheritance, which could also slow down our animations.
I was actually really curious about that, so I went looking for the code. Is that up anywhere if people wanted to look?
We do have a branch on, I can link it to you guys. It's just pure prototyped code. It is on my GitHub. However, what we're going to do is we're going to port this over to a library. It's called Momentum. So Angular Momentum, that's the idea. This will be a library that's, you know, used with Angular, kind of like Protractor's used with Angular. But once we get it all set up properly, it will be something that could be used without Angular. So if you have your own jQuery code and you want to, you know, fire a bunch of DOM events to trigger a bunch of animations, it will work. That's the idea. And this is something where me and Rob will be working on really hard until the end of the year, and hopefully we'll have something stable by then.
Is there any change in the size of the library?
That's a question I can't answer now. We are using TypeScript, and, you know, TypeScript's actually really good. I thought that it was going to bloat the code, but no, it does a really good job of just transitioning it into ES5 code. It's actually not that much code at the end of the day. It's not much more than ng-animate for Angular 1.
So I've actually got a question on that. I know lots of our listeners and viewers are probably curious, some of them are all in on TypeScript. Some of them are like, I kind of like my ES5. I just want it to be able to run it in any browser at any time without any extra stuff. Some people are all in on Babel and ES6. So maybe this isn't Angular Animate specifically, but maybe you could give us your perspective on your experience with TypeScript and either encourage people based off of your personal experience or tell them it's been awful, don't use it.
So I'm really positive on types. I think types are amazing. I think that any high-level stuff with a lot of objects and a lot of data going in and out of the application is where types are really good. And, you know, like, some things that people overlook with types are, it's like, oh, I can just, you know, have an if statement that checks something. Well, that's an if statement that you have to maintain. If you had types in your code, your compiler would find all these bugs and tell you ahead of time that, hey, this is the wrong input value that's going into this function. So that already gives you a gigantic boost of productivity because you can detect bugs earlier and your code will just be less code because there's less checking, error checking, and so on. That's the big the big win, I'd say, if you're trying to decide on using a transpiler or using an ES6 specific one, or you're going as far as TypeScript.
But so if that's your kind of mentality, I think I remember from us talking before, Matthias, that you are also a fan of Dart, right?
Dart is good. I am a fan of Dart, yes. But I'm a fan of Dart because it gives web developers a chance to have really high-level object-oriented programming. So, like, you know, all the nice stuff that classes provide and all the nice things that, you know, you can't get from just vanilla JavaScript. But those are things that ES6 provides, too.
And that's sort of what my question was going to be. That so since do you think that you know, within Google, that people that are fans of Dart with TypeScript get sort of taking hold, that it will be like less of a draw because some of the things that the reasons why you would use Dart, you are in TypeScript and some of the new stuff in JavaScript.
So back when, you know, I talked to you about Dart, which was last year sometime, is the sort of ES6 and TypeScript bandwagon wasn't as, like, the momentum behind it wasn't as strong. So back then, I was just like, do I write my code using, like, just regular JavaScript code, or could I look into something like Dart? And with the way that things have gone now, it's just like TypeScript and Dart, or ES6 and Dart are actually fairly close in terms of feature sets. So, you know, Google, we use Dart a lot internally. It's a language that fits our needs. There's a lot of really good tooling around it. But it's not like there's nothing, none of that stuff you can't get with using ES6 or TypeScript. It's just the way that things have gone down. I think that's a good sign because it shows that web is maturing, you know, front-end tools are maturing and getting better. We're not relying on, you know, spaghetti JavaScript code to do everything we need to do.
So back to animations, like, there was this huge push for reinventing the web in the past led by Famous. They well, since then pivoted to the new model, but, like, what they did was essentially create a rendering engine for the browser, where they're allowing people to create animations and websites through practices previously used in game design. What are your thoughts on that, and how does it compare in some regard to NGAnime 2, and have you tried things previously before they actually scrapped it? Like, what are your thoughts there?
I don't have anything specific in relation to Famous. I'm not super familiar with it other than what it is.
Okay, well, one thing I like that Famous did is I like the idea of the flat structure. So, like, if you have, like, a huge DOM structure of nodes and everything, but then you can convert it down to something that's, you know, just a bunch of divs. So the nice thing about that is that you don't run into the issues of CSS, you know, inheritance and specificity and stuff like that. So that's already one thing that they do, which is really cool. And then I like the idea of using transforms, translates everywhere, because that too is very performant. Not too familiar with the idea of how they use the game designs, like having a run loop and stuff like that. That would be definitely useful for us. But in context of NGAnimate 2, some things that we've done which are similar is, like, first of all, we haven't changed the DOM structure. The DOM structure is what it is. But we've changed the way that CSS is handled. So in your animation code, you assign a style sheet. You say that I want to have animations.css assigned. And in that style sheet, you define all your classes. And then what happens with NGAnimate is it takes in the style sheet, and it sort of parses and it knows exactly what classes you're going to be animating, and then it applies the styles inline. So by applying the styles inline, even though they're defined as classes, it allows you to sidestep the limitations and the sort of restrictions that CSS puts on you. So that already speeds things up a lot, and then when it goes into the web animations level, it speeds it up even further. So we do have similar ideas that they have in Famous, but we're trying to do our best not to take away from, you know, this the normal structure of a web page.
So Carmen actually had to jump off, and she had a question, and I know that Amy has a question, and then we're probably getting close to our time. But I'll go ahead and ask Carmen's question, because I was actually pretty interested in this as well. And it's about testing. So how do you test your animation code? Is it just with integration tests with something like Protractor, or is there a way that you can unit test this so it's a little bit faster? And it's like, along with being faster, that also with the confidence that it's you're actually testing what you think you are.
Yes, so this is something I briefly touched on during the talk. It is possible, and this is the first thing that we're building on to be stable in the tool, CSS testing. So the way that this works is, since you have the style sheet that declares all the classes that are animated, the animation tool knows exactly what it's dealing with. It knows that, okay, we're going to be animating all this. So it can create an element and apply these styles to it and check to see if the styles actually cause the animation to trigger. So one of the hardest parts with CSS animations is, how do we know that an element's actually going to animate when we add a class? So if you have something that has a background of red, and then you add a class that changes the background to red and has a transition, it looks like it's going to animate, but it doesn't, because there's no property that's changing. So what this CSS tool does, it's kind of like a linter. It will tell you, like, hey, your animation's not going to run between step one to step two. And you can detect animations early that are failing. Another thing that it does is it will tell you if an animation's hanging, so like it never finishes. And it will tell you if an actual property updates. So like, you know, if you have some sort of CSS collision, a property is not going to change, but the animation still triggers, but some certain property isn't changing, you can assert that. So this testing tool will be a part of the framework, and it will save a ton of time and hopefully make things easier when it comes to making animations. And then one other thing, for integration tests, what we thought of is we'll have a hook into Protractor, which what will happen is when an element's being inserted or removed with the way that Angular works, it will feed in the animation data to Protractor, and Protractor will animate it. And then you can check to see if it actually animated or if some property changed visually on the page. And this is all possible because we have a DSL. The DSL gives us the flexibility and the metadata to do all this.
That's awesome.
Really interesting, especially considering there's been a lot of pushback recently on DSLs. So I think that it's wise to recognize the benefits of DSLs.
Are you sure you're not talking about like the internet connection, like the DSL connection?
Yeah, right. We've had some problem with DSLs this morning. Yeah. Cool. So I think we just have time for Amy's question, and then we'll go into tips and picks, and questions on Twitter.
My question was just kind of a quick question now, since we had a little bit of time. I feel like, so this is like backing out, because I know, Matthias, you're like really passionate about animations. But at what point, like, do you have any insight or do you have any advice for people as far as like UX and UI? Like, at what point do you start considering this? Because if you're like building up your app from scratch, you know, a lot of times like your push is to get features out the door, like your animations are just kind of like an enhancement. So at what point do you do that? At what point does it like become too much? Do you have any thoughts on that?
So what I would say is that you build out the application without animations first. Nothing. No animations, no visual craziness, all that. It just works, right?
Yep.
If you think about, if you were to remove the style sheet from your application, but your application still worked, that's a good sign. So you remove animations from your application, it still works. The idea with this whole movement of having plug-and-play animations is that if we can get animations to just open the window between state of application to state the next state of the application and have an animation or a choreography in between, then we've done our job right. You should never have to make animations to make a feature work. So if it comes to UI craziness, just make sure your app works the way that it works. And then when you have free time or extra time, sprinkle the animations on top.
Yeah, I guess that was more my question, because I feel like I've seen like some sites that like really make heavy use of animations, but then I've gone and seen like users try to use those sites, and they actually like get confused because like we as developers, you know, we kind of know how stuff works, we're expecting certain things, but sometimes you know, for building out an app that is not meant for developers, I've seen them, like, struggle with things. So.
Yeah, and, you know, if you wanted to turn those off, if you wrote everything from scratch and you wanted to turn off the animations, it would be a fair bit of work. But if you have a solid framework, a solid library that does all this for you, just say turn them off for this page or this boundary or the entire application, and that would give a lot of value to the users at the end of the day.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty cool feature where you're just like, hey, I'm a user that doesn't want to wait for the animation or whatever. Yeah, that's cool. Cool. Okay, so we don't have any Twitter questions. So if you're watching live, you can go and tweet ngericquestion hashtag, and we will answer after our tips and picks. I'll check before we wrap things up. So Amy, why don't we have you go ahead and give your tips and picks first? And what do you have for us?
Okay, so my first tip, because when I was at Angular Connect, Matthias and I were like talking about Vim, got me all excited about it again. So last week, like, I kept telling myself I was going to do this, but I'm always like console logging stuff, and in Node, like when I console log, I do JSON stringify so I can see a better output since not printing to the console. So I just like mapped some keys to like console log and console log like JSON stringify, so I don't have to type that at all anymore. So it's awesome, and I don't know why I waited so long to do that. And then my pick is I've been working with this mentor who works at Pivotal Labs, and he actually used to teach at G School, which is like one of the 6-month boot camps in Colorado. So I just wanted to take a minute to like shout his name. It's Mike Gayhard, and like it's how much I appreciate all his time. That's it for me.
Cool.
Awesome. Go Vim. Jeff, what do you have for us?
Patrick, did you say you had to leave early, or you're okay?
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry, Patrick. Why don't you go?
Yeah, so I have a few tips. So the first tip is DSL. It means Domain Specific Language, just in case for anyone who didn't realize this. And then the next one is learn advanced Google search techniques. So being a developer, it's really great to find answers for your, you know, your problems. When you run into something, you can quickly Google search. Like one trick for finding information fast is using keywords. You know, Google kind of conditioned us to learn, you know, to Google search by keyword. So that's like a technique you can use for searching. And then the pick is the Universal Starter. So this was created by Angular class, but has since moved to the Angular official GitHub repo. So you can find it under github.com/angular/universal-starter. That's where you could experiment with server-side rendering in Angular 2. And that's my picks and tips.
Cool, thanks. You can jump off. Sorry that I didn't get you a little earlier.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Jeff. Oh.
Hold on.
Okay, Jeff, why don't you go ahead and go next?
Okay, just a quick tip. You know, I've been doing some knowledge transfer with developers recently, and I just realized the past couple days how much I actually don't prefer writing in like Microsoft Word documents or Google Docs or whatever, and how sometimes it's just easier just to write code. Like, so you don't have to like actually write functional code. Like sometimes if you just write tests or write the scaffolding for code, that can actually be more effective, and you know, you don't have to go through the pain of like writing the actual words and such. So that's my tip. And then for a pick, there's a podcast that I've listened to for a long time called Texting. It's like a startup like bootstrapper podcast, and they were considering ending the podcast, which would have been sad because both guys were busy doing a lot of different stuff, but there was just kind of a huge outpouring from a lot of people, you know, saying how much they enjoyed and that type of thing. So they came back, and actually since then, the past like 4 or 5 episodes since they've come back have been really, really great. So I would definitely highly suggest that one. That's it for me.
Cool. So you're not suggesting that we commit commented out code, are you? Just kidding.
No, it's not commenting out. It would be to a branch, and just be like scaffolding, so it'd be, you know, just wouldn't do anything. It wouldn't be content.
Yeah, and actually, like, I should clarify, since that blog post I did got quite a bit of attention, I'm not advocating against documentation, using code as documentation. I'm advocating against commenting this out because we're not doing it right now, but I don't want to forget about it. That's not smart. Okay, so my tips and picks, I just have two picks really quick. Babel.js, they just released version 6.0, so it's no longer just a JavaScript transpiler. It's a tooling platform, which is super awesome. And so the upgrade path is not totally seamless, but it is, if you're doing things pretty normally, then you should be able to upgrade pretty well. Actually, I'll go ahead and pick a blog post that talks about a couple of things that you need to do to upgrade if you're using Webpack. And then my other pick is the Protractor Style Guide by Carmen. It's pretty similar to John Papa's style guide for Angular, but this is Protractor specific. So yeah, check that out. Those are my picks. Why don't we have Robert, you go ahead and give us your tips, please, and your picks.
Yeah, my only recent tip, and this is entirely based on my personal experience lately, is question every time you want to introduce complexity to code, because I have found that quite often I have encountered overcomplicated, over-architected code, so I have constantly been in the role of fighting that off. See, a pick. Unrelated to anything, but I went to type into the browser window in Chrome yesterday, Fallout 4, and it auto-completed Fallout 4 release date, and then also filled in the release date, and my mind was blown that I didn't even start typing it, and it already told me what I needed without requiring me to search.
And what is that release date? No, just kidding. Yeah.
Wait, so is your pick Fallout, or is it Google?
It's Google Chrome for surprising me and not requiring me to hit enter to find out the release date I was looking for.
Nice.
That's awesome. Pretty soon they'll just plug into your head and you won't ever have to ask the question.
A little creeped out. Like, Google, you should not answer my question before I ask it.
Nice. Matthias, what do you have for us?
So with the things that Amy was talking about with Vim, it kind of came to mind. Have any of you guys ever tried Webux? W-E-M-U-X? That is the best way to do pair programming, in my opinion, with Vim. So you set up a server, you install Webux, and then you have two people SSH into the server, and you guys can code in the same Vim session. So all the pair programming, all the help that I give friends and stuff like that, I tell them to, you know, log on to Vim, and then we can code something together. It is by far the most powerful way of pair programming I've found. Of course, everybody has to know Vim. Of course, everybody has to be comfortable coding in a terminal. And, you know, your screen might have to be shared with an additional tool. But have a look at Webux, and if you haven't already.
I was going to say, that's quite a barrier to entry there. You're like, oh, okay, if you can do all that, you can pair code with me.
That's awesome. When we were at our boot camp, we, like, had to set up virtual boxes so everyone was on the same environment. But as part of that, we used Tmux so that we could do that, so we could SSH into each other's machines.
Yeah. So if you, because I know, like, Kent, you're a Vim user, and Amy, you're getting into it. So if you guys ever want to play around with that sometime, I can show you.
Cool. Sweet. I would be embarrassed to show you my lack of skills at Vim.
I turned off my arrow keys, too, as soon as I got back.
There you go. That's a good start.
Nice. Yeah, cool. Okay, so we actually did get a question on Twitter, NGR question. So the question is, how intrusive has ng animate been to the Angular code base? I have found myself hitting animate related code a lot in DBG, which means debugger.
So is it intrusive from the user's code, or is it intrusive from the framework's code?
I think from the framework's code. This is, I don't know how to say his name. Vile M. Vainio? Yep. I think he's talking about when he jumps into Angular code base, he sees a lot of Angular Animate-related code when he's, like, debugging and stuff. And I've noticed this as well, so kind of curious about how that is in Angular 2.
So in Angular 1, yeah, what we do is we have an animate service that exists that doesn't do any animations, and then when you add the module, it overrides it. So it's like a, we do that, it's a nice way to sort of add like modular support for animations. But from the actual framework's code, it's pretty simple. It just issues the calls to ng-animate, and then ng-animate does its magic behind the scenes. Now, from a user's animation code, it depends on to what extreme you use it. Like, if you just issue animation calls, then it probably won't be too invasive, but if you're relying on your UI to have animation code to work, then you might have to have extra code in there. And then in ng-animate 2, it will be much more simpler because it will just issue DOM calls to the animation framework, and the framework will do everything.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's kind of like, as long as you follow the idea of, like, build your application first and then sprinkle animations, then you're going to have a much better time.
Yep, definitely.
Okay, sweet. Well, thank you very much, Matthias and Robert, for joining us for our episode today about Angular Animate 2. Exciting things coming down in the pipeline. Before we wrap up, I'll just remind everybody that we have a show next week, same time, same place. And sorry, when I say same time, I apologize that today was actually not the same time because daylight savings is trash. I hate daylight savings. So, yeah, anybody who's not in daylight savings time zone, I am so sorry. But today was like an hour later, I think, for you. So, sorry about that. But next week, it will be the same time as it was this week. And it will be that way for the next 6 months or so. So, it's going to be a surprise from Olivier. He's got something cooked up for our last episode of the year, or of the Angular Air year, which is in November. Our birthday is the 14th. And then a reminder, follow us on Twitter and Google+ to keep up with the latest and greatest. And I think that's it. So thanks, everybody, and we'll catch you all next week.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Matthias.